SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM Online, and at our website, stevebick.com. I suppose you could be watching, you might be watching on the Weather Channel. You think a storm comes through, and No. We had a storm come through last night that they didn't send out one warning. They sent out two at like, must have been 9:15 and then again at 9:40. Huge bands, and it teemed rain at least three times in the area. We're off the turf at Saratoga. Just two races right now. Third is off. And stretches out. You're going to have to deal with the nine furlongs in that third race. This was a maiden 75, fillies and mares. They're going to stretch out to nine furlongs on the main track. And the 10th, the state bred maiden 40s, that stays at 5.5. And it comes off the turf. And boy, Jim Bond, who joined us yesterday, looks imposing. We'll watch for scratches later. I thought potentially we'll see about the maiden 40 for fillies and mares that starts the pick six. There's a very short price favorite in there. Atrus dropping Refinity. And I thought to myself, well, if this horse stays in, a lot of times you see these, 3-5, 4-5 types end up scratching. You think you got a single. And actually, Bond has got Galena that we mentioned yesterday. Galena in there, too, who is probably the other horse. There's a couple of nibblers, including a firster from Charlie Baker. But anyway, I thought, you know what? This may be a day to, depending on the off-the-turf scenario, might be a day to play the pick six. I don't know. The 7th and the 8th, they stay on the turf for now. And they're obviously, Glenn Kozak is watching the weather. And the MTOs are still in. And really, it seems fairly clear. It doesn't sense that there's, unless there's a stray storm that shows up. We might be done with it for at least for now, and then you got a few clear days. The steeplechase race that we were looking forward to, the Jonathan Kaiser, is canceled, so that'll be rescheduled and moved to next week, imagine, and we'll confirm that, how they're handling that. I saw the question on Twitter about the post times. Post times remain unchanged. So first race, first post, first group of horses that go postward, 1:38 today. So not a twilight card, but at all. But we don't start till 1:38. All right. So that brings you up to speed. No Kaiser Novice today, unfortunately, and third and tenth off. The toughest race on the day, I thought, was the 7th. If it stays on the turf, and ideally it does, it is really, really tricky. Full field, overflow field, and I ended up picking the 15-1 shot for Safi Joseph, fair-haired boy, who's stretching out. You've got another six horses that are eligible in here. prefect, Rusty Arnold, but one of the problems is how much pace is there going to be in here. I mean, I think there's going to be a little bit more than it looks like at a glance, given the size of the field. Prefect for Rusty, Cassie's got Windoro, who took forever to break the maiden and is coming out of a couple of allowance tries, now dips into 49-2. Devilish Mood is okay for Ray Handel. Give Me Some Mo for Todd Pletcher. Didn't bring that horse up with him yesterday. We had too many stake horses to discuss without, and maiden specials to discuss without getting into the potential claimers. Amistad, 12-1 for Engelhart, Chris Engelhart. Absam, 7-2. 7-2 morning line favorite and absolutely capable. So there's at least seven horses that are eligible to win that seventh race. And that's the race that is going to make the late sequence very tough. There's a maiden special for two-year-old fillies, which is interesting. Brad Cox, that but the horses we talked about with Brad yesterday, that including at Indiana. We'll talk to Bill Downs later. Got the two stakes there, and a nice sequence. They were on the turf yesterday, so it seems like the Shelbyville cloud may have abated for at least for a little bit. Interesting. That's an interesting group in the sixth race. It starts the pick five today. And, you know, the obvious horses between Let's Be Clear and there's Amos coming back with Take the Back Roads, who didn't have a great clean start. Take the Back Roads next Tuesday for our friend Al Gold and Kelly Breen. Ron Moquette's got a firster on the rail, G Money Live or Live, and it seems okay. Orlando Noda has got a firster with Manny Franco called Gabriella's Miracle, 12-1 that I included. Kind of a work, not just a work tab note where. Yeah, there was some indication that there's some talent there, but also a sibling note. There's a little bit of a hint that there's some talent in that family. So the sixth and seventh, if you're playing the multis today, pick six, pick five, pick four, second half of the card. You've also got a good state bred second level allowance going short on the turf. And I do want to get back to that. Andy, I knew without I didn't spring it on him, but I knew that without further discussion yesterday that I probably should have shot him a picture of the work I started doing on this topic. Because, as I mentioned, so far three races that qualify as state bred long on the grass, male, female, doesn't matter. And even in terms of last year and previous years, and I'm going to keep going through and building this document, as it were. So far, you're looking at 7-1, 16-30 on the three races. Last year, 20 races, average mutual of 8-1, winner, 18-57 was the tote. And it's, you know, interestingly, favorites won six of the 20 races, so 30%, so not, you know, not too far below a normal favoritism scenario. But I'll run them down. Bush at the beginning of the meet last year, 11.5-1. Mott, 10-1. Maker, 17-1, 7-2 for Ebro, 14-1 McPeak. You had a 1-2 Jimmy Jerkins favorite. Bond had a 2-1 favorite. Carlos Martin over 9-1. Chad Brown, 9-2. Engelhart, 11-2. Chad Summers, 36-1. Clement had a 5-2 favorite. Hennig, a 4-1. Cox, basically an even money. Mott had a very short price, a 2-5. Then Nevin 7-1, Jerkins 5-1, Tag 24-1, DePaz 9-2, and Pletcher a 5-2, 2-1, 5-2 favorite. That those were the win odds on the 20 long on the turf state breds last year. I'm telling it's and I haven't started to record them, but the converse on this is that as I mentioned to Andy yesterday, the turf sprint side is much more formful. You know, which is counterintuitive because we, I think, collectively, you know, think that, oh, they're chaotic. They're not that. Again, that part is anecdotal. I want to get a base, probably 3 years, right? 3 years is probably enough to go back. But it's been going on longer than that. Absolutely. So anyway, we're gonna keep looking at that. We're also gonna keep tracking the pick four, pick five, pick sixes. And in fact, Pete's gonna join us in this hour at about 9:40, and we'll get his first thoughts about the weekend and the opening days, the first 10% of the meet. And I'll probably bring this up with him because I haven't done the averages yet. I usually do it with Seth on Sundays on Loose on the Lead. Seth not available today. He's out shooting B-roll, as it were. And so he'll sit with me tomorrow live. He'll come back kind of like we did last week. I'm going to do the show from the track. Not every Thursday. I'm going to pick one day a week. And Wednesdays, Thursdays seem like the obvious ones. You know, Friday is weekend preview, and it includes, you know, other venues. And the Monday recap, I thought about going. Maybe after one of the big weekends, we'll do a Monday recap when I know I can get, you know, a couple of the successful connections live. But I want to be there tomorrow for the grade one for the Smithwick, and that turf should be perfect tomorrow for the jumpers. So we'll do the show live from Saratoga tomorrow. But the pick four numbers are meager. I mean, they're meager. 283, 159, 144, 140, $268, $27, $64, and $74. Unless you're going to really drill down and, you know, two by one by two by maybe, by, I don't know, two or one and hit it, you know, 10 times and plenty of you approach it that way. But I think the more casual player, you're not, you know, confident that way. And so the pick five. And as Andy said, the absence of the CAW money absolutely helps. They give you a rundown on the pick fives: 979, 5,083, 749.50, 614.50, 1,694. That special middle that we actually hit nicely. I was very pleased with that. And I got a lot of nice notes. I'm glad a lot of you were able to come along. And of course, that one had the crowded trade gate scratch. So it only paid 561. The straight payout was 800 and something, 840, I think I saw on the will pays. And it comes down a little bit because, you know, of everybody that had crowded trade. You now get, you know, the favorite who came through, and Bo Liam. So it paid $561, but you get it twice. So, you know, $1,120, $300 for the late Saturday, and then Sunday, of course, with kind of the carved up fields, $382 and $293. My point is, I'm not saying don't play pick fours, but wow, it is hard to. It's hard to justify, you know, any kind of medium-sized expense against the pick fours. It feels like you're much better served if you've got a, you know, I won't say limited bankroll, but a conservative bankroll that has to be managed. Well, I think you got to play pick fives, that's been a growing sentiment. So, just a couple of thoughts as we get ready to start the week, and I'll give you a quick rundown. Well, first half I already mentioned. Bill Downs later, Sid to start hour two. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, and undoubtedly, let Sid riff on win approval. And as it happens, Pat Kelly, who's driving up from downstate, Pat called me early this morning as he was driving, listening to the replay, and he had not heard about win approval's passing. And of course, he and his father had long associated with Live Oak, and Pat had some interesting insights about her, and he says they almost, you know, bloodstock people were suggesting to let her go. And Pat and TJ said, I wouldn't do that, given her connection, Sultry Sun, and, you know, was kind of the last tie in that regard. So they ended up keeping, and boy, what a, you know, Mrs. Weber just absolutely, I mean, a font, the four millionaires, amazing. And just the two wins. I mean, she was a modest winner. She didn't even ever try stakes company. Took her a handful of starts to break her maiden. You know, she was getting some modest checks. Then she quickly won. She went back to back, actually at Monmouth, broke her maiden, and then came back and won an allowance right away, but that then got hurt. So she didn't really get a chance to fulfill, and it seemed like she was maybe getting better as she got older. Joe Bravo actually broke the maiden on win approval. 1996. But he gets mad at me when I call him the old man in the sea. No, I'm going to hear about this. Sorry, Joe. Just kidding. We kid because we love. there's also some other, there was other, another passing, which was a little more, you know, it's one thing for a 29-year-old. Danza died at Fair Winds in Ohio. Cardiac episode. So, I didn't bring it up with Todd, probably should have, but Danza, and I think there was actually one other that I'm missing, that I is probably somewhere on this desk. I think there was one other bloodstock note. Anyway, there's Sid later, and I also want to talk to Sid about the Haskell result, and never a shortage of topics for Sid, and I mentioned Pete and Sid and the Bill Downs. Oh, Larry Rivelli. In fact, Casey, let me send you, because we haven't had Larry on in too long. Ravelli's going to join us. And it's always fun. Rivelli, a character. And that was a big win. The Busy Channel in the Arlington Stake. And a nice win for Jareth Loveberry, too. So I wanted to get Rivelli in here and talk to him. And in part because haven't had a chance to talk to him about the Arlington situation. And he, you know, one of those long associated with the Heights. So we'll get some Rivelli in, and I think we're going to get some West Coast. I promised that we needed to spend a few minutes as well. Reached out to Steve Anderson. So hopefully Steve is going to join us in hour three to talk the Del Mar opening weekend. They come back again 3 days this week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then they'll add next week, they'll add Thursday, and they'll get into their regular beat. So another three-day weekend coming up at Old Del Mar. Casey, in fact, Case has been transferring. Got a new computer, and so he's transferring a lot of the our classic audio. So, Case, got to make sure we got Der Bingelhofer. We got to get Bing Crosby plugged in, right, for a little turf meeting the surf. All right, there you go. There's Ravelli, and we'll talk to Larry. Been a while, actually, and I'm remiss on my part. By the way, people really enjoyed the visits yesterday. I thought that was really fun to reach out on opening after the opening day success at Colonial and get a first chance to talk to Sarah Nagel and to Madison Myers. That was fun yesterday. And a lot of people, other friends and people that they both worked with over the years, enjoyed hearing them. It's always nice to hear from Larry Ravelli, and he joins us now. Larry, congratulations. Busy channel. Been one of my favorites. Well done.
How you doing, bud? Good. Thanks, bud. How are you?
I'm good. And I, you know, these Chicago conversations are going to be really bittersweet. I mean, I had Jack Sisterson on Monday. We talked about the American Derby, and he said he's thrilled, you know, to get a win in a Chicago place that he really appreciates. For you, it's a little different. I mean, it's central to your whole career. And before we talk about the racing side, talk about your view of what's going on.
Oh, man, I've been kind of smack dab in the middle of this whole thing. It's my view is I've stopped having an opinion because I end up looking like an idiot every time I open my mouth to tell them what I think's going to happen. So I'm just kind of waiting to see the final stretch run here, what's going to happen as far as if the track's going to go down or if they're going to keep it, they're going to partner up with somebody. Us horsemen have put a bid in, and nobody knows where we stand. And we got these rumors of the Bears, and it's just really no idea when we thought we had an idea, to be honest with you.
And there hasn't really been any change in the last 3 weeks or so, right? The you know, there was that missive about the the Bears showing interest, but I certainly read some opinions that was leverage against the city to rebuild Soldier Field. Then there's the Village that is considering an ordinance so that they can control what happens to the property. There's the Horsemen's Group. It's already, it's going to be August here in 10 days. And
I think the dates, the application for the dates for next year are due by the end of this month. And I think it's within the next week to 10 days. We'll have a lot better picture, at least what's going to go on for next year here at Arlington for sure, as far as if they apply for dates, if they don't apply for dates, if someone said they want to try to run somewhere else instead of here. And it's getting muddied up here at the end pretty good as far as what everybody thinks is going to happen, I'm sure. Churchill Downs already knows, but I'm being a publicly traded company, I'm sure they can't release it till it's, they got to do everything probably by the book, which I imagine that's what they're doing. I'm assuming they already know what they're doing, and everybody else doesn't.
In the meantime, it does seem whenever I see, anything social media oriented and any reports about, particularly Saturdays, it feels like people are coming and enjoying it, and it remains one of the real jewels in American, not just American, in racing worldwide, and so it's got to be just everybody, right? Everybody comes and they're thinking that might be the last time they ever visit. It's brutal.
Yep, all those things go through everybody's heads when they come here. I sit in my box and look over the infield. It makes me sick because the place is gorgeous, and they really haven't even kept it up that well in the last 5 years, 6 years, and it still outshines all the tracks in the country, if you ask me. as far as, you know, the way it's put together, the marble floors and the paddock and the flowers and the just the size of the place and the location. And I agree with you. I think more people are coming out this year towards the end because I think it's the end, because we've had an unbelievable handle for compared to the last few years for the track and turnouts and people showing up in droves, more so than even on a Thursday when, you know, kind of look at these tracks all over the country, you look at the grandstands, even the Churchill on a weekday, there's no one there, at least in the grandstands.
No, it's a destination. It's a destination facility.
Yeah.
I mean, it's from that standpoint, and I just
everybody's scratching their head, just kind of like you are. I imagine they just don't. It's hard to, you know. But when someone owns it, we can't tell them what to do with it. That's just a sad reality of the whole thing. Yep.
Well, and it's also knowing how many conversations I had. I mean, on an annual basis with Mike Campbell, and I think about, you know, the horsemen's groups and you know, the way in which, I mean, this whole thing has been Lucy in the football for 15 years.
Yep.
Where every time you thought you were at the, you know, at the 1 yard line and were ready to get over, something happens. And it, whether it was from Springfield or whether it was, you know, behind the scene wranglings, and this all, it actually goes all the way back to the beginning with the riverboats and how they withheld that money and managed to somehow, you know, go into a four corners offense and never give up that money that was intended for the racetracks, and it all starts with that.
If we had the money back that they didn't pay us, we're supposed to match us. We could just buy it. He can build a new track, believe me.
No, there's no doubt.
It's a shame. It's a shame,
Well, and plus the Byzantine recapture provision has been a bugaboo in this. It just doesn't seem possible. Now, not to look beyond you know, a future without Arlington, but let's appreciate the Carey family and what's going on, you know, in over by Cicero.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're doing the best they can, trying to get the casino up and running. And they've been a little bit set back last few months, I'm sure, due to COVID and maybe a couple other hurdles that they're trying to jump. But I know they're moving forward, and we have to be thankful for that for sure.
Well, meanwhile, you're sending out live horses on a regular basis. That's not a new phenomenon at all. But let's talk about winning the Arlington Stakes. And I've liked the Busy Channel for a while. What a nice win this is for him. And you know, he's nibbled, you know, as a allowance horse, but at the same time, you know, has kept moving forward, which is not unusual for an English Channel.
No, I believe that those English Channels actually get better as they get older, and we were kind of hoping the same thing with this horse. He's always showed us, you know, some ability. He's never been quite like a stake horse, but he's, like you said, he's able to knock out the allowance conditions and be competitive at, you know, Churchill and Keeneland and Kentucky Downs. And it was real nice to get that win the other day, especially for Patricia's Hope and Vinny and his mom and here at the track and their home track. So that was exciting for them, which made it exciting for myself as well. And I think we're gonna take a shot at the Mr. D, which used to be the Million. And then go from there. That's our next step, as long as he stays remaining doing what he's doing.
Well, a couple of things. I noted on Saturday during from about, I don't know, 3 o'clock on between Saratoga, Monmouth and Arlington, it was mayhem. It was English Channel's, I think, 54th stake winner. And if I'm, was this Love Berry's first stake win, graded stake?
It was his first graded stake win. Yep. Oh yeah.
How about that?
He was pumped. Yep. Yeah. He's a good kid. Good rider. I like him. He's The All-American kid, that guy. He's a good guy.
I got to get him on. That's really nice. 1,500 wins just in recent weeks, actually. He passed 1,500. And his first graded stake, that's great. And he's actually gotten along better with this horse than anybody.
Yep, I agree. I agree with you. I was just going to say that. He does. I mean, obviously, we have horses that they don't, but this one, he does. I'll be honest with you. He's gotten them to relax a little bit behind horses. He also could go to the front if we need him to be. He's a pretty tactical horse, which makes him always in the mix, you know, in one of these type of route races. And going further and further, which I really didn't have a doubt that he could get. But there's always a doubt till you do it. And he's had no problem with it. And I don't think he'll have a problem with a mile and a quarter. He might have a problem with Chad Brown, but not the mile and a quarter.
I love it. He also obviously is particularly tough at Arlington. I mean, four of his five wins have come there.
Yeah, he likes his place. Yep, he likes the track. He likes the turf. I'm sure he likes the competition too. But the other day was in a slouch field, so he validated itself at least by giving them a shot to run in one of these type of races. So, you know, that's what we're gonna do as long as he stays healthy. I mean, I don't like going into any race knowing that I'm gonna be probably 10 or 12 to 1, but in this particular case I think we don't have anything to lose, to be honest with you.
Bring us back, because you and I've talked about him as a horse just in handicapping, whether it you know, it's been races. Because you've basically run him, you know, throughout Mid-American racing, Keeneland, Churchill,
right.
Turfway, Kentucky Downs. So he comes up a lot, and he shows up in PPs. What was his origin in terms of being purchased?
He ran, it's funny, he ran at Arlington first time out, and we're all in the paddock, and I believe Steve Manley trained him. For Bilbrey Farms, who I actually ended up training a horse or two for after the fact. Catalano's a buddy of mine. He had a horse in a race. His horse, Manny Wah, wins the race.
Oh, yeah.
And after the race, he's telling everybody, this is my Derby. I think this horse could be the blah, 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 blah. So I knew the owner was the breeder, and I knew Steve Manley a little bit. And I figured, well, if Wayne likes this horse so much, and this horse ran second to him, a pretty good second, you know, we're always looking to buy horses. So
yeah,
I asked him if he'd sell, and it took a day or two, and I think we made him an offer he kind of couldn't refuse, and we got the deal done. And the rest was, you know, history. That horse I had made the most money with by not winning, you know what I mean, seconds and 100, you know, the Kentucky Downs races are 150,000, you run second. So up until his last few races, we're kind of like, this horse is a little bit snake bit as far as, you know, knocking out some big purses. And like I said, we got it done the other day, which is nice, and that's how we ended up buying him. He just ended up being right under our nose, and just a brief conversation with Catalano in passing, just, you know, trying to see what he thought of the horse. And after he said that, I figured we weren't going to be able to buy Manny Wah, so we'll buy the second one. Yep. And the guy bred him, so, you know, those are usually the type of people you like to buy off of.
You know, and if there was a horse just... There was a... You know, that I see the dam's name, that Busy Missy, and there was either a two-year-old or a three-year-old recently that, and I made the connection, and I saw the dam's name, and I can't remember where, you know.
One-timer?
I can't remember. I don't.
Two-year-old, he went by 12 here at Arlington?
Was it? Was that the? No.
He went by 12. He was a tick off the track record for a two-year-old. That's not the one you're talking about?
No. I thought it was a sibling? A sibling of Busy?
No. Oh, no. You're talking about Venetian Dream.
There you go.
That's a three-year-old. Might be a four-year-old. I think he's a three-year-old. I had him. That's for the breeder. The breeder gave me that horse after our success with Busy Channel. And Mrs. Mays had seven sons. Only one was named Willie. Kind of the thing. He's a full brother, but he wasn't anything like Busy Channel. He ended up just being a you know, an average horse, which happened.
Sure.
And I think he got claimed away from us, and he's running for somebody else now. Yeah.
All right. Cause I saw the
Yeah, that's a damn Busy Mizzy. That was the other day,
too. Mizzy Mask there.
Yeah,
that horse ran recently. The for you, I mean, you got horses at Ellis too, and you're always eligible to come to Saratoga with one. You had a terrific week because in addition to this maiden an allowance win on Sunday as well. You had that Isabella Cantella win an allowance on Saturday. Roger McQueen at Ellis. On Saturday,
yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty good horse at Roger McQueen. He's a nice horse.
It's a 2-year-old, second start, unified for Mrs. Wilson.
Yep. Real nice horse. And I think he's going to be something special. Hopefully, he can keep going in the right direction here. I'm going to run him a little bit longer.
Should mention, I mean, this was a serious purchase, right? This was an OBS top sellers at OBS in March.
Yep. It was. He's an unbelievable looking horse, just heads and shoulders above the rest of the horses at that particular sale. Beautiful horse.
Well, you were busy, Larry, right? You were pretty busy this 2-year-old season.
Yep.
How many?
I probably got about 32-year-olds now.
Wow.
30, 35, yep. We have a bunch of home. We get home. We have homebreds every year as well, but our purchases at the sales have been pretty good so far. Like that one timer that won, and Roger McQueen, and Land Remembered, and we had a homebred win. She's Reckless. So we've been hitting on all cylinders, at least the last few weeks, it feels like, for sure. Everywhere we go, we're in the mix.
Nice. How about one that one or two that have yet to start that we should watch for?
Let's see. Who do we got? I got one, but she's on the farm. She's by Nyquist, out of a real good mare, Richie's Girl Gone Wild. The horse's name is You Like Apples. You like apples?
You
like those apples.
How about them apples? Well, there is the back half of that line, which is how about them apples is running somewhere. Is that one of Richie Ravens or not?
That's Ravens and Patricia's Hope. I bought that horse at the yearling sale last year, along with a couple other ones that haven't run, along with that one timer that ran last week. Kind of bought a group of them there.
What about anything to these recent other winners? You had a 3-year-old breakthrough, the upstart, Upbeat Melody.
Yeah, nice horse. He had a hard time getting the horse to the track. And I think he's just a horse. I think he'd be a nice allowance type of horse. I don't think he's going to be in the class of, you know, these other stake horses or these horses that we had, like Well Abled and the Tabulator and all those horses. I think this horse might be a little bit, you know, a tick below them, but nonetheless, an honest, you know, useful horse for sure.
What, you know, you mentioned one timer from the end of June and the big win. Stake options, or are you going to take
the
time?
He's going to run in the Victoria Stakes on the 31st at Woodbine, 5.5.
Very nice.
That horse, I got. I don't want to jinx it, but I got high hopes for that horse. Hopefully he'll be in a win in your in race over there at Saratoga. And my goal is the 5/8 turf.
Sure.
Biggest Cup race, with Del Mar. He ran an 80 buyer the other day, which I think was first or second as far as buyers in the country, and with a pick off the track record for a 2-year-old, which Well Abled owns a track record, so he's a pretty nice horse when he was younger. And if we can keep him together and keep him doing what he did the other day, I think he's going to be pretty serious.
In terms of the synthetic, and obviously, you know, you go up to Woodbine and you get to stay on the synthetic.
Yep.
You know, but then, you know,
I breeze them on the turf here at Arlington, okay. and he breezed awesome on it. The jock came out to work them and said he felt just as good, if not better, than the synthetic. So we had the opportunity to do that, which was nice. And like I said, after this race, if he wins or runs 1-2, I'll stick with the plan. If he doesn't, then we'll, you know, have to call an audible. I'm sure I'm not bringing sand to the beach. That's for sure.
Well, he's out of a blame mare, so there's some of your turf. And by Trap Shot, what a nice purchase this was. $21,000. Holy cow!
I bought 7 of them that day, and that was the cheapest one. Go figure. Hey, probably the best one too. I bought a Curlin, I bought a Nyquist, I bought a Liam's Map, and then I bought a Trap Shot. Yeah.
That's why
this game will make you shake your head every day, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny because out of an unraced mare too, yeah, this is interesting, Larry, and I'm gonna ask you something here. I'm imagining what the page looked like because you got a blank. You got a blank first dam, but the second dam was La Grande Balladora, the very nice Fleet Alex mare. So there was black type there, and you know you got kind of a middling stallion, and so you get this horse for 21. Was this strictly a physical? You just liked liked the way he looked?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. To be honest with you, I really, you know more about the pedigree than I do at this point. That's exactly what it was. I knew it was going to be a cheaper one, and the way he looked, and my type of horse, as far as what I like, what I look for, you know, athletic, at that age, it's hard to, you know, vision them growing up, how big they're going to get, if they're going to grow at all, but he had everything in the right places, and was really athletic looking for a, you know, for a yearling. So he just ended up being, the price wouldn't have mattered. You know, if it was 20 or 30, we probably would have been there regardless, you know, something like that. It would just ended up being that he was the cheapest one. And like you said, probably more so because of the page. Like you said, Trap Shots, you know, they're okay, but they're not, you know, probably one of the most desirable stallions at this point.
Well, That's the beauty of it, and you certainly with a young horse with talent, you'll get the most out. And so we'll watch for one timer. It's a cute name too.
I got one more for you. Adios,
yeah.
Asher. Adios, Asher. Jean Elizabeth's full brother, New York bred, coming to Saratoga in about 3 weeks, assuming this whole herpes thing gets over with.
I'm going to check on that, too. We're going to get an update on that later later today.
Yeah.
Adios, Asher. All right.
Yep.
Well, you're in business, obviously. Larry, one of our favorite operators out there, and we don't have to worry about you.
Come to Chicago, buddy. Come. Let me know when you're coming. You got to come by. If this is the last year, you better get up.
All right. I, you know what? I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right.
you let me know when you're coming. I got you.
All right. It's a deal.
Buddy.
Larry Ravelli, everybody. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Have a good one, bud.
You too. Larry Ravelli. He's something. Busy Channel wins the Arlington Stakes, and congratulations to Jareth Loveberry. That's great. That's just great. His first graded stake win. We'll get him on. I'm delighted for him. Yeah, I agree. I think I see him ride. He's live. In the background, I think I hear Pete.
You hear my breathing. Is that it, Steve?
Yeah. That's like... That's the great air, right? An airplane. Take a little breather, and then there's Hervé Villechaize waiting for you.
Oh, my. The great Hervé Villechaize. I was a big fan of his work on Fantasy Island and elsewhere. But it's always a bit of a fantasy for me, Steve, to be able to turn up on your airwaves, especially on New York Aftercare Day, one that I've been really looking forward to this meet.
Well, and before we move away and into the topic at hand, have you seen My Dinner with Hervé?
You know, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. Is it worth checking out?
Absolutely, absolutely. About the journalist, I'm going to forget the journalist's name, that was given an assignment, and goes and it's something of, it was something of a gonzo experience, and it's quite entertaining. My Dinner with Hervé.
Sasha Gervais, is that so right?
It's been a couple of years probably now, probably in 2019, I think it was on HBO, or it may have been made for one of the pay channels.
With Peter Dinklage, right? From Game of Thrones, so much else in the title role.
Yes, very good.
All right, I'm going to add this to the list.
Well, you mentioned today and the Thoroughbred Aftercare, not just the aftercare either, because also the Rick Violette today and everything that Rick did. We had Andy Belfiore last week in anticipation of today's stake and today's activities, and you're active with the helping TRF, and we're always happy to feature the various activities, and it's a busy summer, in fact, of fundraising options. We just had on Monday, right? We had the gumbo, the first of the two gumbo. This one with Kendrick Carmouche.
Kendrick was doing a great job. I saw the pictures. He had his wife help him make the roux. I heard that everything was delicious. We're going to have another one on August 11th. Big news on this front, Steve. We were trying to decide, are we going to fly in the gumbo? Are we going to fly in the chef? And it ends up being better to bring Frank Brigston himself in to make his gumbo.
Ooh.
Now, your New Orleans-based listeners are going to know that name. I know when we mentioned this to Haley Amos, she got very excited about the idea of Frank Brigston coming to Saratoga to make the gumbo. You can find out all about that event, trfinc.org/players. This is really a Mike Baychok production that we're just happy to tag along with. And we're going to have a great night on the 11th. And you're right. It's so great, the sea change that's happened. And I often give Baychok credit for introducing it, where players now, we're conscious of our role in the aftercare process and the idea that the way the game has changed, and a big part of horse racing, social license to operate, the idea of trying to take care of these horses when their racing days are done. And props to the folks at NYSA for creating this New York Thoroughbred Aftercare Day, because I'm hoping this can become a template in many ways for other jurisdictions. And I'm looking forward to getting over there today and rocking my TRF gear and checking out the community booth. And then we've got TRF sponsoring a race today in race number 10. So it's going to be a fantastic day out there, and it looks, you worry when you say things like this aloud, but it looks like we're going to be okay weather-wise. There's going to be a couple showers, but it doesn't look like anything too deleterious. I think it's going to be a great day over there at Saratoga.
Well, it certainly couldn't be any more volatile than it was yesterday and last night.
That was crazy.
There was the matinee thunderstorms, and then came the evening performance. It was like the Greyhound track. It was just unbelievable. And when Tina and I went for a walk, and then we were coming back to the house, she goes, I think it's going to rain again. And it was, what's sad about it? I don't mean sad because we're losing a couple of races off the turf. What's sad is that we're getting all this precipitation, and there's parts of the country that are desperate for it. It's screwy.
if we could only reallocate the resources, we'd all be a lot better off. That much we know for sure. But that's I remember from my first times coming up here to Saratoga, I'd never seen a thunderstorm as intense. I think is the first one I ever saw up here. Sean Clancy was riding then. I was tipped by my softball teammate that his college roommate had a bed I might be able to sleep in Saratoga. I was so poor at the time that this sounded like a good idea to show up at a dieting jockey's apartment to stay for the weekend. And it was that big greenhouse right on Union. Oh, gosh, I forget what the cross is, but I think people probably know what I mean. And the storm was so furious that they had like a second-level deck, and all the furniture from the second-level deck ended up about three houses down. It was crazy. You see that type of thing up here. We deal with it. And, I mean, hey, if we only lose the two races off the turf today, we're going to call that one a win.
Yeah, no doubt. And, and frankly, as Andy mentioned yesterday, for those that listened to the replay, you know, Andy mentioned it as we were wrapping up. We really dodged a bullet Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, there was 10 days out, there were people that were already ready to, you know, pack in the whole Saratoga meet. Oh, it's going to start. It's going to be terrible. Oh, it's like, could you just stop, please?
Deep breath.
Unbelievable. And ended up with three really nice days. I was down at Monmouth, Thursday, late afternoon, evening, and Friday and into Saturday, and then hustled back for TV Sunday. Some thoughts, Pete, about the early portion, the first 10% of the meet.
It was a great opening few days. It was some really memorable performance. I was very happy to see Witt make a return to the races that was successful. This was a horse that I'm sure, like many people, said aloud after that race on the Belmont undercard, well, there's your hopeful winner. And the Stanford Stakes, maybe a nice stepping stone on the way to that. I thought Albiqua was great. Charlie Appleby, what an amazing training performance to get that grade one exacta in both the Just the Game and the Diana. But one thing that I think is an interesting storyline is these maybe late season emerging three-year-olds that could have a little bit of an impact on the division. Ducale coming back in that performance earned a strong 97 fire speed figure. Some speed figure makers around have that race even faster. And then the Bo Liam race as well came back really fast. That's two really quick numbers for that son of Liam's map. Be interesting to see if those two can be heard from as the season progresses. And then, obviously we're talking Saratoga, but all the drama surrounding the Haskell and this fascinating wide-open three-year-old division that's still all to play for in terms of who's going to end up the champ in that division. I was super impressed. And really looking forward to the next 7 weeks or so up here.
Well, and between the babies and we got our first, I don't want to call him fastest horse in her fastest horse in the world. But we've got some typical, Saratoga, Saratoga summers and not just, and I'm sure Del Mar will produce these as well. I might talk to Steve Anderson. There was one that Todd Fincher, of all people, had a what looked like a nice two-year-old the other day at Del Mar, smash ticket, a midnight loot. Yes. That won, got a 78 buyer. But when it comes to what we saw here, just turning back the 90, where is it? Opening day, right? Yeah, opening. It was an opening day.
Echo Zulu.
Yeah, 92. Yeah, 92.
As a 2-year-old filly in July, and Gunrunner, who's just been off to such an amazing start. And with that female family, Steve, I'm still scratching my head as to how she paid 4-1. That was some result. I thought microbiome was good in the second, and then Echo Zulu just blew the doors off in the fifth. I'm doing a special series of shows with Sean Tugel of Gainesway covering the two-year-old races up here. We're calling it Baby Talk, and we've got plenty to deconstruct from these first few days when we get back on the microphone together.
Well, and speaking of babies, there was also Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda.
I heard that was bamboozling people as to what the some people who aren't big Mandalorian fans, I guess, didn't quite get all the references and all the public love and fanfare. But Baby Yoda delivered the goods. Another decent female family and a horse that made sense. But. I know. If you don't watch The Mandalorian and you don't know who Grogu is, it might have been befuddling, the glee the crowd got out of Baby Yoda.
My favorite is the Baby Yoda stickers all over the place. You'll just be walking around, and on a telephone pole, there's Baby Yoda. He's like everywhere. It's just hysterical. And then there's those little figurines and then the plush toys. And Tina and I were somewhere. And we came very close to buying our granddaughter a Baby Yoda, like, I don't know, a pullover, which it had the Baby Yoda ears, and it's hysterical. And I love that, what's his name, created the whole thing. Oh, my gosh.
Who's responsible for this?
Jon Favreau.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Favreau's the showrunner. He and Dave Filoni are the geniuses behind the sort of reboot. You know, a lot of us, so just to go down the Star Wars fan rabbit hole for half a second, because you never know where our appearances are going to go, Steve.
No.
But, you know, a lot of fans not that thrilled with the direction of the Star Wars franchise in terms of the sequels that were sort of handled in the old-school big movie studio fashion. And Filoni and Favreau show that the future of Star Wars probably largely on TV and telling real stories. And I mean, I tell you, I think The Mandalorian is the best Star Wars since Star Wars. And I mean, if you don't like Baby Yoda, you probably just don't have a heart.
Well, it's funny because I am not. I saw the first and more or less lost interest with the subsequent two. Beyond the initial Star Wars, which was just a spectacle. After that, and then, you know, chapters 1, 2, 3 and 6, 7, or 7, 8, 9, I'm not interested. But I am interested in Harrison Ford coming back for another Indiana Jones. This is really going to be the last crusade. Because he's like 88.
I'll tell you what, Ford in the seventh movie in the sequence, the first of the new sequels, Ford's performance is excellent. And that's actually, that is one that I would say you could take a look at. They call that one The Force Awakens. But I mean, I'll watch anything Harrison Ford is in. The guy's fantastic. And it's not just his big blockbuster roles. The guy's a legit actor as well, that I'd pretty much watch in anything. So even though the Indiana Jones franchise has been a little up and down at points, plenty of ups, I figure if they're going to bother to go back to that well, and if Harrison Ford is going to bother to do it, I think they're going to do a better job this time around. So I too am looking forward to that.
Well, we enjoyed, Tina and I did actually last year, we were late to it, but we thoroughly enjoyed Mandalorian.
Oh, good.
It was very fun. Really fun. And the cameos, absolutely, it seemed like any A-list actor that they asked to jump in was happy to do it. And anything with Giancarlo Esposito wins.
He's fantastic.
He's the greatest.
I've been a huge fan going back to Do the Right Thing. Had you seen him in anything before that?
Smoke and Blue in the Face.
Yeah, those are after, I think. I think those are both.
You think they're after?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess probably. I guess so.
But they're all in the same era. They're all in the same era. But
Homicide.
He's a tremendous actor.
Homicide is Al Giardello's son. Comes in about season 3.
Yeah. Oh, he's a great actor.
He is.
There's a star turn on on Breaking Bad, of course. But yeah, he does a fantastic job as the nasty Moff Gideon, and I love it when they can straddle that line where they're kind of chewing the scenery, but they're keeping it. They're keeping a lid on it, and they're just making it work. It's the perfect Star Wars villain, you know. And he does a good job at it.
He does. Well, he fits in. He fits into that you know, those governors of the Force. Yeah, very true. A quick thought, Pete. I mean, we're obviously we're in trouble. We've blown the turn. Because I did want to bring up one thing with you, and it just get you. I'm just going to toss this out. Is it time to? Are we ready to suggest to people with limited multi-race wager bankrolls to basically eschew the pick four in favor of the pick five completely?
I get where you're coming from with it, for sure. But for me, it all depends on where your opinion is. I still think it can be an underrated degree of difficulty higher with that extra leg in the pick five. I do believe, like, if we're talking about you can only pick one and you have to play it every day, I would say play the pick five. But I think the right way to do it is to always look exactly where your opinion is, where are you just trying to muddle along and get through. And if you can dial your opinion more into that pick four, I think it's a smarter way to go, just because it's exponentially fewer possibilities of winning combinations than in the pick five. So I wouldn't give up on it entirely. And as important as the lower takeout in the pick five is and all these other things, I still think that putting your opinion and the sanctity of that above all else. Put game selection greater than takeout to me. So that's one thing I think of. But I mean, these pick five pools have been strong, and if your opinion aligns and you're choosing between the two, give me the pick five. Does that make sense?
It does, and I say this because I kind of ran down. I'm going to keep a journal of all the pick four, pick five, and pick six returns for the meet. And this is something I typically go over with Seth, and we didn't get a chance on Sunday going into the fourth day of the season. But going back to Thursday, early pick four paid $283, early pick five paid $979. Late pick four paid $159. The late pick five paid $5,083. So what, 30 something times. The early pick four on Friday, $144. The pick five early, $750. The late pick four, $139.50. The late pick five, $614.50. Early Saturday, $268 versus a $1,700 essentially pick five, so six plus times. The late pick four, $27. The late pick five, $300, paid over 10 times. And even on Sunday, with all the chopped up, with the off the turf, early pick four, $64. Early pick five, $382. Late pick four, $74. Late pick five, $293. And I between no CAW money on the pick five and the 15% take, I felt it myself. I'm just telling you, I would rather take that $36, and I'm not somebody that, there's plenty of guys out there that are doing, $5, $10, pick fours and or have narrow ticket, 10 times. And that's fine. I would rather be a little bit, spread a little bit wider, trying to catch, something large. Like, in fact, hit that middle pick five on Saturday for over 1,000. So I'm maybe what I'll do, maybe we split the baby, Pete, and try to do the narrow focus pick fours at a higher increment, and maintain the, you know, the 50-cent approach on the pick fives.
I think, I think there's some validity to that, and especially, you know, when you look at those races. It's something that Matt Vagvolgi, frequent contributor over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, recommends, is grade your opinion on a race. Like, how much do you like the
race?
Right.
Yes.
Depending on where your A's are, the more you can, I definitely recommend allocating more bankroll. Let's just say the extra race that makes the pick four, the pick five, you don't have an opinion in, and then you've got, you know, A B or something in the other four that make up the pick four. I'm gonna always encourage you to look much more at that pick four rather than just guessing in an extra race. But depending on how those races grade out, you might, you know, maybe it's the pick three or the double that you're gonna want to get involved in as opposed to those. Just it's the more clubs you can have in your bag as a horse player, and the more you can look at your wagers as a way to express your opinion numerically, the farther along you're gonna be. But I love your idea of looking at those payouts and creating a little model where you look at what that extra horse was and how that horse's price and chance of winning changes the payout between the pick four and the pick five. And I have a feeling, just from you running through the numbers there, that the pick five is going to look a lot more appealing, that's for sure.
Exactly. And then that point's been made, you know, since the proliferation of the low rake pick five, and then Naira's folded in not just the low take, but also the exclusion of the wager for the, you know, for the computer
retail only
teams. Yeah, exactly.
So retail only. I mentioned game selection. If you can not play against those guys, that's, you know, think of it. I mean, it's a pari-mutuel market. We don't often think about it like a poker table, but it's basically a poker table. And if those guys aren't sitting at the table, I'm a lot happier.
Exactly.
Because they're very, very sharp.
And I think you've coined almost a nickname, because when you mentioned Matt Vagvolgi, the way you said it, I thought it was almost like a wrestling name, the Mad Vagvolgian.
I don't know if he has a brother. I don't know if they'd wear masks, but I think he could be onto something.
The Mad Vagvolgian. It's like a Mandalorian character. There we go.
Amazing stuff. Can I chirp in one more note about aftercare?
Of course.
Just to bust things up.
As much as you want.
So the most fun way that I know of to support aftercare is to play in our Horse Player Happy Hour event. Not only are we adding, at no cost to players, two Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats to the season-long contest, which somebody could jump in today and still have every shot of winning one of those seats and some shot at getting both of them. It only costs $20. We're doing them every Thursday, and all the rake goes to the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, who do the important work of accrediting the aftercare organizations, and our friends, we mentioned them before, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Check it out. Horseplayers.com is the website. We're doing the last six races from Saratoga on Thursday tomorrow. We'll put Del Mar back in the mix when they get going on Thursdays later in the meet. But we do a live stream, Matt Bernier and myself. We're having a ton of fun. We make it very interactive, questions, getting other people's opinions, shout-outs, all that good stuff. Horseplayers.com, Horse Player Happy Hour. Check it out.
Outstanding. Pete, I will see you I'll see you later this afternoon.
I sure hope so.
All right, because I didn't see you over the weekend getting going, and we're off and running. I mean, this is it. We're 10% down. I'm always stares at you in the face that, you know, first 4 days of the meet, and you think, my God, you know, already 10% in the books. So everybody get up here.
A lot of candle left to burn. Yeah, a lot of candle
exactly.
left to burn, but we're off to a great start. We're going to keep this momentum going, and hopefully we can do some in-person appearances before it's all said and done up here.
Absolutely. I'll be over tomorrow. I wanted to be there for the Smithwick, and so I'll probably either a Wednesday or Thursday each week I'll be over. So they'll certainly – and you got to bring Perrin. We got to see how much Perrin has grown in two summers.
You'll be shocked. But if there's donuts involved, she's down.
I love it. Pete Fornatale, everybody, looms boldly, and the In the Money player podcast team, and so many different ways to enjoy the game and get involved. We're going to take a break here a little past the top of the hour. In fact, it's not the little. It's 10 minutes past the hour as we kind of got, into the weeds. There's always some way for us to veer off course. Sid Fernando is going to join us. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, and let Sid particularly riff on Win Approval's remarkable broodmare career and how a relatively plain race mare herself, although she got hurt, as we mentioned, so there's no way to really know, but she seemed to be getting better with age, but certainly her offspring did, and with a sequence of I don't want to call them obscure sires, but some offbeat stallions other than Ghost Sapper. Mrs. Weber fashioned three millionaires, two Breeders' Cup winners and champions. And, I mean, amazing. Back after this, hour two, Bill Downs in a little bit. We'll look at Indiana, and then we'll get some handicapping. Got to, if Seth's not coming, maybe it's a good spot for Tom Law, actually, to do some. Maybe get Chapazian. Got to do that. I haven't ever had John Chapazian on. Should have him on. All right. Back after this. Hour two.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents